It's the Mac Show, yes. The week in Apple is being discussed by an esteemed panel and myself here on the British Tech Network. And it hasn't really been a great week, unless you got an Apple Watch last Friday. And then it's been a fantastic week. Completely changed my life. Overawed, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Joining me to discuss the week in Apple, starting us off, Patrice. How you doing, mate? Patrice Bendemore from Germany.
Hi, guys. Pretty good. Pretty awesome day so far. So I'm pumped.
What's been happening, mate? Why are you pumped? What's been pretty awesome?
Just overall. I mean, I had an awesome job interview today. Weather is really awesome. It's warm. Everything. I mean, it's just. And I'm on the Mac. So
cool.
As I said,
are you getting a new job then? Do you think?
Well, looks like it. Yeah.
Is it going to stop you from doing the Mac show with us?
Well, could be.
Oh,
we'll
geez.
See. We'll see about that.
Okay.
Cool. Damn employment.
We'll ring him up and have a word with your employer and
see. Those guys are tough for a douchebag.
Awful.
We'll send some recommendations.
Yeah. Don't put Chuck down as a reference. Is what he's saying. next to Patrice, it's Adam from the closet. How you doing, mate?
I'm doing all right.
Are those your braces from TGI's or something to the left of you or to your right?
Where?
You look like you've got a set of braces from TGI's, yeah.
These?
Yeah, is that when you work at TGI at the weekend?
Nah, that's my that's my Disneyland flair.
Ah, cool. How you been, mate?
I've been all right. Trying to deal with the dog here. The dog is going to be a problem today.
That's okay. Don't worry. We can't hear him.
Sorry.
That's fine.
I'm good, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next to him, it's Doc Rock, all the way from Hawaii, 5 a.m. in the morning. Thanks very much for turning out, pal.
You shaved the extra hour off. It's 4 a.m. in the morning. Damn funny.
Oh, God. I feel even worse now.
You know what's funny? Watching Adam translate suspenders to braces back to suspenders. But it's a lanyard, because I can tell.
Excellent.
Yeah, anyway, I'm doing great. I'm about to send out a recommendation to Patrice's new boss. And I'll be like,
that's necessary.
Don't hire Patrice.
That way. Okay.
Yeah. And last
we want you on the show.
Last but one name is Lee's Chuck. How you doing, mate?
Ewan, I was going to say I'm wonderful, but to be honest with you, we're having what they're calling on the news a pollen tsunami here in much of the United States. So between the allergies, sinus infection I picked up in Houston last week, and my American accent, I don't know that anybody's going to understand a word I say tonight, but let's muddle through.
I got all of that. That's fine. No, I mean, I don't do so great during summer season. We get hay fever, and then it's kind of 1st of August it goes off, but I'm in the throes of it at the moment, but Benadryl and a nice nasal spray that was recommended to me seems to work just fine. Not bad at all. We've got a different, very slightly different Mac show today because we've got a live studio audience. Lives in inverted commas, by the way. There he is. If you didn't know what he looked like, Muller Biker in the chat room, that's him.
Hello.
He turned up for the Mac show. So he sat in the audience seating area. To the back of me there, which is technical of pictures. So a lot of you would be thinking, oh, I bet, you know, your studio's huge, I bet. Well, you've just seen a picture of him sat there, and here's a picture of the bit that I broadcast from. That's it. That really is just it. There really is a wall just right behind me that's got a thing on it. But Steve has been my consultant today because he's good with the old security, if you know what I mean. And I've taken him up to show him the new studio and saying, let's suss out the security. What did you think, Steve? He's got earphones on, he's got one second delay. Oh, he's got more than that at the moment, by the looks.
Okay.
Let's take a pool on how long it takes for them to hear us.
The delay to Hawaii is 2 seconds. The delay to the other end of my office is 40.
That's the police for you. He shows up a couple.
Yeah, he turns up a couple days later. Yeah, very good. But we've been out and had a look at the office. The office is there. There it is. There we go. Superb. Absolutely fantastic. Love it to bits. There is loads going on. They've put some new flooring down in there, so there's carpet going in this week. They reckon it's going to be ready on the 18th, so I will have the keys on the 18th, and we'll be getting ready to move in. I'll move some stuff in, just the light stuff. But if you're around on the week of the 30th, the weekend of the 30th, on the Sunday, the 1st of June, is going to be the mass move day from everything from in here to everything up there. So if you're around the Birmingham area and you can help and lug a few things around, or you've got a big van that we can put stuff in, save down on the journeys and put the car and that kind of stuff, in the heavy things up there, then it'd be grateful. It's only literally, you know, 100 yards up the road, so it's not a million miles away. And if you do come on the Saturday, I will buy you a curry. Or if you come on the Sunday, I will buy you a curry before you go home to say thank you. So 31st of May, June. There we go.
That'd be cool. You know, yesterday I was like, I have a van with some shovels and cling film and a couple of bodies in it. And you were like, yeah. You were like yesterday, yeah, go ahead, bring them along and help out. And I was like, you totally didn't read that in the chat room, because I was talking about like Dexter. And he was like, yeah, come along. I'm like, all right, cool. I'll just bury them in the wall or something. Everyone was laughing because you had only caught like the vampire and some bodies. It was pretty funny.
Ken Mullerboy can see the applause sign from his seat. Thanks, Joe.
Some joke.
We've had a few reviews. Thank you to the people that have bothered to leave us a review. It does make a world of difference to us. If you'd like to help the British Tech Network, there is nothing better that you can do than retweet the stuff that we push out. So look for our tweets actively and then pass them off to your own people and get them to listen to us or read the blogs. I've got a new blog up about photography, which I hope you like. It's a proper conceived one. I've done it very seriously. And also, leave a review in iTunes. Nothing does us more value than a well-placed iTunes review in terms of leaking it up. So there's a couple of the reviews in. First one's from Thunder Knuckle. I listen every week religiously. Great show, great banter. Kelly's laugh aside. That should be new. Kelly's taking a bit of stick these last couple of weeks because she's not here. The things I've learned from the show has led to me having extra work and USPs top work. Love you guys. I don't know what that means, but okay. Pedro has said, I've subscribed to this show from the very beginning when it was founded by the Bagel Tech Network, and I've never missed a show. The Entertainment Factory is normally very good because the host doesn't mind lashing out at the fanboys, who are mostly from the US, not last week though. When the fanboys start defending Apple at all costs, the host steps in with a hefty slice of feet-on-the-ground realism. My only criticism is that there are not enough Brits on the show, but I guess that's because the US market is very large. No, it's because all the Brits are still at work, because we record on Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock, mate. So it's... We need people that don't work for a living. No one that you see here actually has a job. That's the thing, including me. The best shows always have Will Green on as a guest.
I still got one, but my job is so flexible, I can just take off whenever I want.
Well, that's
useful. So that is the perfect job.
Classic Indian Centric. Shame he doesn't have his own podcast. No, Will doesn't have his own podcast. A good mixture of opinion, entertaining argument, and very irreverent humour. Thank you for all the
hard
work.
Except he does.
That goes into keeping the network going. I hope to make it to the bash and have a curry one day, James. And Muller here has left one in the chat room. I first started to listen to this and wanted a new coat and wanted to get a British perspective on coats. To my surprise, I found it was about fruit and apples, more to precise, rather than coats. Anyway, I carried on listening, thoroughly enjoyed the mix of British and American views, and the banter was great. Anyway, off to find a waterproof coat podcast.
It's an untapped market.
Muller has also put down on the video podcast review, I've got an idea. Watch this podcast with a bottle of scotch and take a slug every time Ewan has to bleep or when Lego or Star Wars is mentioned. You do realise that that's actually the big show. He's got a 40-second delay, so he won't be hearing it in a minute. And there's also some other reviews as well. And we've got some for The Pinch as well, which is fantastic. I'll just read you the headlines for these. Optional alternative to reading the paper on the toilet. The Pinch for when you need that moment of clarity. And Chris Campion's written, laughing while you pinch. 5 minutes of random topic, lots of laughs, The Pinch. Perfect companion to listening or watching the show during the morning motion. There we go, which is what it's about. So keep listening. Spread the word. Thank you very much to everyone who leaves us a review. It makes a huge difference. We do appreciate it. And we're going to do our Patreon heroes a bit later on, because we've got some people that I want to say thank you to and work our way through those people that do support us on Patreon. The Wicked Apple. It's been a bit of a bland week. How are we getting on with the watches, people?
God, I'm really loving it. And, you know, the most impressive thing to me, I was so excited. I've been playing with this watch, been enjoying it. And as you start to use it, one of the new things about UI that you totally forget about is Force Touch. And outside of being from Mickey to Complication to Mickey to Complication, I hadn't really been using Force Touch much. And then all of a sudden, I started taking various apps. And while you're looking at the screen, just press and squeeze and see what happens. and I'm finding all kind of extra functionality that I didn't know was there, like changing the color of the emoticons. You can do that before touching on it. I don't know why that escaped me. Or like when you're listening to the radio section, or we call it iTunes, hello, you can press and switch it from letting the phone be the source to letting the watch be the source, provided you have a Bluetooth headset paired. And after I have that, something very similar to that Bluetio one that that Dr. Richard talked about yesterday. So yeah, I mean, really, really cool stuff. I'm enjoying it so far.
Adam, how are you getting on with it?
Well, good. Yeah, it's kind of worked its way after, what, a week and a half or so now, just into being a thing. I'm not so obsessed with it anymore, but, you know, getting, you know, it's in a lot of ways, because I had a Pebble, it hasn't changed what I do a whole lot. It's just gotten a lot better at sort of keeping me up to date with my notifications, you know, getting me quick bits of information. I will say what's surprised me, and it might be because I, you know, I do work at home, so often I'll, you know, be outside my office getting coffee or getting lunch or something like that. It's great to be able to get like phone calls and or be able to see who's calling, see if I need to run back and address something like that. So, I mean, those seem like little things, but at the end of the day or a week or whatever, it makes a big difference. So it's these little nice things, you know, sort of additions that together sort of make it really pretty cool.
Patrice, what have you found?
So far, I'm really, really enjoying it. My biggest fears haven't come true. It's really comfortable to wear, which, I mean, for someone who hasn't worn a watch in 10, 15 years now, was a concern I had, and I haven't had any issues. The battery life is amazing. I think Apple really, under-promised what they actually
Well, it's interesting you say that, because Scott Kelby, who's someone I admire greatly, as far as his work in Photoshop's concerned, he's saying he's going to dump his Apple Watch because the battery life just is not good enough. And I was absolutely floored by that, because, I mean, I've worn it for a day, and I've used it for a day. You know, it's been on at 7 o'clock in the morning, it's gone off at 11 o'clock at night when I've gone to bed, and I put it on the charger, and there's times it's usually around the 25 to 30% less, but it's you know, there's some nights it's 40% when I put it back on the charger, and I haven't shied away from using it or anything. I can't believe that comment. There's something wrong there, because unless he's using it, you know, ridiculous, like he's looking at
he's
every
gotta
photo.
Be obsessed with it.
I mean, a week ago on Saturday, I was showing it to friends. I was tracking workouts. I was really, really using it. I mean, using apps and everything. And after, I think I said something like 16 hours, it was still at 56%.
The one area where I think it would fall short for people, and has been falling short for people, is people who work out a lot. I think the heart rate sensor, you know, it comes on when you're doing a workout, and I think it stays on. And I think that is a pretty significant battery drain. So if you're not a nerd like us who, you know, maybe doesn't work out as much as they should, you're one of those people that works out, you know, 2 hours a day, then you might be running into issues. But I don't get that Scott is that kind of guy.
No.
I mean, I've worn it yesterday during my badminton practice for 2 hours, and I think I was at 46% at the end of the day.
So did you have the workout app running though?
Yeah, everything. An interesting experience. I was showing it to my friends at the badminton practice, and they were tapping on it and trying stuff and stuff, things like that. So we were really, really using it. The display was on almost all the time. At least for me, it hasn't. I mean, maybe there's something where it needs or where it drains the battery, but I haven't experienced anything yet.
I think one of the things I think is I think it's released Siri. And my perception is either it's made Siri better or Siri is better, and it's just using it well. I mean, the thing that I've really, really valued is the ability to do other things and still be able to interact with the outside world. Yep. So you know, simple stuff like the wife sends me a message while I'm cooking dinner. I just dictate an answer and send it, and I carry on cooking dinner. I don't stop and go and look for my phone because I've heard it pling somewhere. Setting a timer as well, you know, Siri set a timer for 5 minutes, bang, done. And then the other one is like the wife walking around this afternoon before we me and Steve came in here to do the show, and she says, I can't find my sodding phone. And I just lift my arm up, hey, Siri, call Sharon Rankin phone. And bang, her phone's ringing, and I haven't moved. You know, that kind of stuff is uber cool. And I don't know, is Siri better? Is anyone seeing a benefit to Siri on the other devices, or is it just through the watch?
And there was, oh my God, Siri is so amazing now. It makes me wonder how come it hasn't affected the phone, because I'm assuming some of the lifting is still coming from here. So I'm waiting for the phone to, when you talk to Siri on the phone, to get better. But it hasn't for some reason. So I do everything through the watch now, and it works perfectly. I am a very amazed. LG Punk and I were talking in the chat right now, because I use Evernote religiously, and being able to take quick notes with Evernote and not type a lick, like, is pretty freaking impressive. Now, the one trick to using Siri on the watch, don't read as you just talk. Just talk.
Yeah.
Because it will read wrong. And right before you press go, it will correct all kinds of things, and it'll be right.
One of the features you probably, probably didn't even notice, is that Siri on the watch can detect the language you're interacting in. So if you get for me, it's important, because I get text messages in both in English and German, and Siri, most of the time, it failed once today, but so far, it has worked. It can detect whether the message is in German or in English, and can switch the mode, so I can dictate in whatever language the message was in. So that is really impressive.
There's a couple of comments in the chat room. Big Russ is saying it's just another calculator watch, overpriced and irrelevant in 6 months. You couldn't be further from the truth there. You cannot be further away from what this device is about. And the thing is, I haven't used it to tell the time once in a week. And I still think it's the best thing since sliced bread at the
moment. I'm in a position sort of like you, right? Being self-employed and doing whatever. Rarely, if ever, am I actually giving a crap about the time. It's just not something that I have to do. There's only a couple of things that I ever really look at the time for. And that's right when a footy match is about to start or whatever. It's like, those are about the only times I'm sort of checking the watch. But Russ, I got to tell you, it's... A lot of people would have spent at first, including one of my friends who got a watch just to see how he would like it. He doesn't even do any of the kind of techie things that we do. And he's already finding uses for it that he never found before. Mostly keeping up his appointment as an on the road sales guy, like, and being able to check the calendar real quick and make appointments. So, yeah.
I know it's a watch and it sits on my wrist, but calling it a watch is kind of really just doesn't do it justice. It's far more than that. The other comment that's come through as well was from Anthony F. He's saying, has anyone changed from an Android device, and is it any better? I don't think we have in this group, but I can tell you that I've got the wife's got a Microsoft Band, and that's very, very good. I'm blown away by that as a device. It's superb. And the wife, who is Mrs. Untech, absolutely adores it. She thinks it's cool, which is just, where's my wife? What have you done with her? MS Band. Using MS Band yet?
I want to comment on the Siri getting better thing. I don't know how this relates, but just so people know, there was a story that came out that recently Apple completely rebuilt the back end of Siri in terms of the server architecture and the structure. Supposedly they're using something called Apache, I think you pronounce it Mesos, M-E-S-O-S, and also something, believe it or not, called Jarvis. It's having to do, looks like, with some sort of like platform as a service kind of technologies. But basically, in a nutshell, it's supposed to make the whole sort of back end more distributed, faster, those sorts of things. So along with that, I'm guessing they made some software tweaks and are maybe able to process some things more quickly, because I too have noticed, not only on the watch Doc was talking about, but even a few times on the iPhone, where I will dictate something, a bunch of words will be off, and just like he said, you wait a second or two and suddenly magically it just corrects everything. So I think what it's doing now is sort of taking a first pass, a quick first pass at what you're saying. Then it hits the server, and then I think the server tries to do some contextual stuff, figure out what you're trying to do in context, and make correction, you know, finer corrections over there.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to say about Siri, though, on the watch, because I love it there too. I have had occasions where it will completely sort of lock up or be slow or not responsive, to the point where once or twice I had to just give up and sort of reboot the watch. And I don't know if anybody else has had that experience, but you know, there's some bugs to be worked out, and it's not a big deal. I don't want anybody to think there's a big problem with this, because I think a lot of people are playing up the sort of slow app thing as being it is the Achilles heel, I think, of the watch right now, but it's definitely not a deal breaker, and it's something that Apple can fix. So I'm not overly concerned about it.
Yeah, the other thing to note, though, as well, is that it's still based on your ability to connect to the web. So
right.
if and this is true of the watch equally, if you haven't got a great connection, if you've got one bar of 3G and you give a Siri request to the watch or the phone, it still goes, I'm sorry, I can't help you with that at the moment. You know, it's not great. It's got to have that connection. Even if it just stops right. a little bit, it does fall over pretty quickly. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Doc saying anecdotally to Anthony in the chat room, I've heard from 3 Android wearers, and they all say that they love the watch better. So there we go. We shall see.
Actually, this week, Kelly was on the show with Leo, and Leo's like, he's quick to, if Apple makes any misstep, he's quick to point it out faster than your wife bringing up shit you did 5 years ago.
I'd have him closer to fair comment, because I'd give Apple enough stick as well. So
yeah, what I'm saying is, he even said, as a person who's been wearing Android Wear for a while, and he thought he wasn't going to be impressed by the watch, he said he's even more impressed by the watch, and even to a point where smart watch is doing what kind of sort of he always wanted it to do, or more, even things he didn't expect it to do that he hasn't been able to grok thus far using an Android Wear. And he said he personally just picked up the LG Urbane, and he's waiting to test that, because that is the latest edition of an Android Wear, in order to see like where they have progressed it now that, you know, Apple Watch is in the field and the Urbane is, you know, sort of released just directly same time or just after, in order to see if it had a chance to catch up. But yeah, it's pretty amazing at the end of the day. And I'm going to have to agree with Adam. I've only had to reboot my watch once, which is surprising for where we are in its duty cycle. And normally
right.
with a brand new version of the phone, or even just a brand new version of the OS, you would be ironing these kinks out for literally a month. And I am absolutely surprised that 2 weeks on, the kinks are very tiny. And when we haven't even got update yet. I mean, we're still on version 1.0 watch, not 1.1. And so when we get 1.1 watch, that's even going to be more impressive. And also, I think the big thing is, as you scroll through the store, yes, there's about 3,500 to 5,000 apps, but so many of the big apps haven't even made it all the way over yet. I mean, the key ones are there, but there's still a handful of stuff that hasn't made it yet. And if you haven't triggered your camera with the watch, you ain't playing with the watch yet. Triggering the camera with the watch is super sick.
Yep.
You can full res selfies now.
Yeah, no, I think the only thing I'd say with some of the apps is, so like I've got the Skywalk app, which I love for holding up and seeing where stuff is and in the night sky when I use my telescope. And it's like, this is available for the watch. And you're like, oh, and I went and got it. And it just, all it does is tell you the phases of the moon, tell me the next astral event. And it's just like a little information screen you swipe through. And it's like, the kind of perception there is I was going to hold my wrist up and see where everything was. But of course, I suppose it's not going to do that, because it's got like GPS in it and that kind of stuff. But there's a few of those things that have just kind of been a bit, okay.
It's going to take a while for developers to figure out this platform. And I think I said this last time, you know, we got to give them a little bit of time, because they haven't had physical devices. They haven't had time to be able to interact with it. And I'm really hoping, you know, Doc mentioned all the apps that are out there and there's going to be more. I think a lot of developers are probably waiting for the ability to create native watch apps, which I think is a really smart move. You know, not to rush into it, not to try to be there day one, but try to really figure out the platform and wait till they can do the things that really make sense for their app. Some of the existing apps have done a great job because they understood how small the screen was and they're additive. And then like you and like you're saying, I've seen other apps where it's just sort of like, this really feels like you just wanted to have a watch app so you could say you had a watch app, but you really didn't really think the, you know, think it through in terms of the different experience. So I think developers really have to figure out the experience before they can really start building quality apps for this.
Yeah, no, definitely. AT&T has got rid of the grandfather rights, or they're trying to get rid of the grandfather rights for unlimited data plans. As a result of AT&T's network management process, customers on a 3G or 4G smartphone or on a 4G LTE smartphone with unlimited data plans who've exceeded 3 and 5 gigabytes in billing may experience reduced speeds. Is this affecting any of you boys out there in the States? Are you grandfathered in and now you're going to be pulled off, or...
I gave it up a long time ago, never looked back, and I've been so happy that I gave up my stupid unlimited plan.
Really? So, yep. I mean,
and I've been wanting to, Adam, to be honest with you. I've been wanting to give it up, honestly, to switch over to T-Mobile, and this is going to sound so stupid, and everybody in the chat room, you can yell at me, and maybe if enough people yell at me, I'll get over it. It was the present that I got from Steve when I worked at Apple, and it's like the last thing I'm holding on to from Steve, and I kept my original phone, the one that had the paper with his signature in it, and for some reason I know it's super stupid, I can't bring myself to get rid of it, but when they throttle me, holy crap, it goes down to dial-up modem speed.
Yeah,
it's
no,
really, really ridiculous. See, so the way I solved it, Ewan, real quick, is really funny. I hooey together all of the businesses in my neighborhood, and I hooked up with one of my friends who runs a backhaul company. And I had him wire my entire neighborhood with 100 by 100. So when I step out of the house for about 10 blocks, I still have epic connection. As a matter of fact, it's actually faster outside than it is inside. And it took me like a year to put that deal together, but I got the developers, the major developers of the landowners of the neighborhood to go for it. And all the businesses have thrived for it. We've all gotten better with business. So I was lucky to find a way to fix it. But it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, I just looked at my data now with how they're doing data on AT&T. We have the family share plan. They had an offer for a while where they would double your data if you wanted. So I had my data doubled, and then now we have rollover. So like right now, I have 23 gigabytes remaining on my data plan for the month, yeah, and I'm never going to use that up.
I had unlimited, and they had to tear it out of my cold, dead hands by the time I gave it up, because I wanted it for the principle of the thing. But finally, I got a new phone through work, so I gave up the unlimited. The rest of the family is on the family share plan, and there's so much data now. But, you know, what we really need is competition. It's not It's not the policies. It's not the government, you know, stepping in regulate. It's competition. If we had better competition, you know, in both the cable space and the cellular space, I think we'd be a lot better off.
Yeah, the pricing is ridiculous. What we pay for bandwidth, both in terms of, you know, landlines, if you want to call them, you know, cable modems or a DSL or whatever it is, and cellular. Yeah, that's really the problem, because there is no competition.
So, I mean, you know, Doc's holding on to it. You're saying you got rid of it and you don't care about it. I mean, so for the average American who's still holding on to it, is the advice give it up?
Yeah. I think I just heard yesterday from a buddy who gave his up. And actually, from my really good friend, Topher, he gave it up. But then he did the smart thing by sticking his mom and dad on his plan. And see, I don't have that luxury. I don't have any kids. And my blood parents are deceased. My Hanai parents are the people that adopted me to keep me going. They're on the family plan with my sort of adopted brother. So I don't know if I could roll myself into their plan and figure out a way to do it. But yeah, the double your data for me would take me from unlimited to 10, which I guess more than I use. I rarely pass 5. But when I do, holy crap, it sucks.
You guys,
yeah, but I mean, even there, when you price it out, Doc, this is what pushed me over, because I was on my own plan for a while, and it was just a six gigabyte plan. I think it was about the same price. I gave it up because I needed tethering, because I didn't have a, you know, I didn't have a Wi-Fi, or I didn't have a cellular iPad. And I looked at my data over history, and I only went over five, like 1 or 2 months a year. And when you go over, they just, you know, they charge you another $10 or whatever it is. So in the long run, you know, when you price it out, you don't get throttled, and you are not paying all that much more, even if you go over. So
I might
that's kind of what put me over the edge.
It never ceases to amaze me how badly bent over you guys are. And I don't, please jump in with during the year. But I mean, Muller's put in the chat room, three SIMs unlimited 4G. So for $22 a month, I get unlimited 4G, where there is 4G carriage, I get unlimited data with up to 4G speeds. I can tether without affecting that unlimited status at all. Doesn't matter. So my MiFi is no need anymore whatsoever. I get 2,000 texts and 600 minutes of talk time.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. I'd go for no talk time. I don't know. Yeah. I've hardly ever spent any time actually speaking on the phone, but I'd love the data. I'd love your kind of plans over here.
Paul Wheatley saying in the chat room, tethering is only 4G, not on mine, mate. I'm sorry, not. It still works. I still get unlimited. My bill doesn't change, no matter what I do on it.
And I still don't get tethering on AT&T, even on the family share. I don't know about you, Adam.
I do, yeah. But I pay for it.
You have to pay for, you have to pay for extra for it, which I refuse to do. It's my data. If I want to send it to a different device, it's up to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you, Chuck. That's the thing right now is I can't do tethering because if I do tethering, it will break my plan. And they wanted to charge me like 15 extra bucks. So honestly, if I do switch, I'm probably going all the way to T-Mobile, which, by the way, John was just here, and I found out like on the last day, and I was like, damn, I would have texted him, hey, let's go have a drink at my pub, and just to see if he said, yeah. But he was literally right down the street from me for like a week, and I totally missed it. And I normally follow his tweets just because he's hilarious.
And he was talking about that on Twitter.
The purple, and I didn't see it.
Paul said in chat room that I said 4G, not 4 gigabytes. I don't have a 4 gigabyte limit on mine, and there's three other people in the chat room saying that they haven't got a limit on those. He's saying he's unlimited everything, but he's sure he's capped at 4G. I'm pretty sure I'm not, but we shall find that out then. There you go. Challenge for everyone. Find us the webpage, and we'll have a look. If you're on AT&T, the advice of the people here is don't be a dinosaur. Let it go.
And thanks for go and consider alternatives.
Yeah, really. Thanks for bringing it up, though, because I have definitely needed a group therapy, and I think I'm gonna go investigate today. So, if nothing else besides waking my ass up, I got some good data advice.
Yeah, I never regretted giving it up.
The only one thing that I'd say is may make it worth holding off. I could have sworn that I heard a news story in the last week or so that indicated that AT&T might have finally lost that battle about throttling the unlimited people. Anybody remember that?
I thought I saw that story too. I thought that's what we were going to be talking about. So it was interesting when you took the story the way you took it.
Well, the story that I've got is dated yesterday at 7:13 a.m. Pacific. Last October, the U.S. Federal Commission filed a federal court complaint SAD accusing the carrier of misleading its smartphone users by charging them for unlimited data or reducing data speeds. Did not adequately inform its customers that they'd be throttled. Have experienced speeds as low as, so I think they're saying that I think what's happened is they've seen that the judgment has gone against them, that they can't just do it. So now what they're doing is notifying people it's going to happen anyway. So I don't think you're going to be any better off for any period of time. I think you are absolutely screwed. So
several of the sites that I read were spinning it like they were going to scale back on the amount of throttling they were doing.
Just the bottom is put you and just a note, American companies are lazy and greedy, not like Europeans. I don't know. Yeah. I think laziness and greediness is also
it's universal.
Yeah,
I'm gonna just say point blank. No argument.
Everyone's got a touch of that in them, mate. Definitely.
I would just hate to tell people to give up on unlimited on Friday and have the word come down on Monday that they're gonna stop tethering them.
Yeah, I think the problem here, Chuck, might be bad headlines, link baiting headlines, because I'm looking through the stories a little deeper now, and exactly what Ewan's saying is correct. They're basically, they changed the language in their policy to make it clearer that they're going to throttle your data.
We're still screwing you over. We're just going to make sure we're clearer about it.
Apple Radio or iTunes Radio is going to be launched in several countries in late June. But there is also a story about the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, looking into starting an investigation into Apple relating to its streaming music services. I don't know if that's just kind of a fact-finding thing or whether there's going to be any kind of kicking at the end of that as well. Still in the early stages of the inquiry, are asking whether Apple's efforts will change the way music labels work with other streaming services, for example, curtailing ad-supported music and pushing more songs into paid tiers of service higher rates, according to one of the people that was talking. So,
I would guess that it's a proactive thing after the whole ebook case.
Right.
There you go, Patrice. So I agree with Patrice. I agree with you and Patrice. The FCC is doing this because they are just double checking. And everyone took a headline and go, oh my God, let me run as far as possible left with it. Because do you think any executive at Apple, after going through what they went through with ebooks, turn right back around and your mom says, hey, don't touch that. And you go, screw you, lady. And you touch it and then a backhand is coming. Are you dumb? Like nobody in their right mind would do that. And so it's funny how every single blog has taken that story and flipped it into the way that makes it sound the most insane and went that way like anybody would do that. And I think the first person to call bollocks on it was Ken Ray. And I agree with him 100%. There is no way in heck anybody at Apple is doing something that dumb after what they just went through with ebooks.
Yeah, and if they were, they would be smarter about it. So no paper trail or nothing.
Yes, they would have hidden it if they were doing something that dumb.
But that's where the dumbest thing I heard this week.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you have a whole bunch of different executives in here now. You have the Beats guys who are doing, you know, Johnny Iovine and doing a lot of the negotiating, and they have some pretty clear ideas about who should be paying whom. And I'm not talking about collusion. I don't think they're going to stupid enough to go down that road again, even though I'm not sure they were guilty the first time. But I do think that they would be very happy if Spotify ceased their free tier and everybody, the whole industry, went to paid only.
Yeah.
Yes. Chuck, say that again. Say that again.
The whole thing?
No.
Can I jump in? I thought the same thing, Chuck. You know, like one of the things when I started seeing this story and started reading it was, I wonder if, you know, they've got these new people from Beats, they've got these new executives that do things a little bit differently, probably. I don't know a lot about that industry, and Doc, maybe you have some insight. But, you know, I thought, well, maybe Jimmy's, you know, in there doing something, and that's where this stuff is sourcing from. But that was my only thought, because I don't think Eddie or Tim or any of those guys would, for all the reasons everybody stated, would be getting into this kind of stuff.
Adam, you're correct. So I think Jimmy definitely has a different take on it, but Jimmy's been in the game long enough that he would know that this stuff is going to come out and this would be done in sort of a wrong way. So yes, it would benefit everybody if the free tier go away. But Apple's not the type of company that worries so much about the way the competition is doing things to where they're going to pull some. Even just the idea of what these guys are talking about is a little backhanded. Yes, it is due diligence for the FTC to go in and do this fact-finding mission before anything happens. But that's just not Apple's way of doing business anyway. They'd rather come out with a service after sitting down and watch everybody do it for going on 5 years, change the way the game is done, go in and do their own service, see how it works, makes adjustments accordingly. I don't think they need to go and try to get rid of free tiering, because we all use this data, and I'm assuming most of the people that wrote those crazy articles use these type of services. But the average person out there, they still aren't even on streaming yet. Less than 7% of the population is even streaming. So Apple sees a market where the market is not yet, and they're out there to get Sharon Rankin and Ellis Rankin on streaming, not us. Right? They want the lady who looks at a Microsoft band and goes, holy crap, this is the coolest piece of tech in 20 years. They want her on the streaming service. I'm not picking on the wifey, Ewan, because I do not want to get slapped if I make it to the bash. I'm just using an example that, you know, we'll tell her I said that. She doesn't watch this crap, right?
Thanks, man. This shit's way too bad for her.
It is entirely possible that someone in Apple said at one point to someone at some label hey, wouldn't it be a good idea if you didn't do the free streaming with Spotify? But that is more, I would say that isn't wrong because they didn't really tell them what to do. They just said, hey, think about it.
I think
that's it.
It came up at the club when they were sitting around the couch. You know, that's how I see this sort of thing going in. And then word gets out, hey, they were talking about this thing. And then the FCC is like, what? Let me check that out.
Chuck, you were saying.
Yeah, I think Apple's clearly very, very good when it comes to delivering products, looking out in the market and seeing what's there and designing something that's much better. Services, not so much, right? I can't even think of it. iTools, iDisk, Ping, iTunes Radio, lots of stuff that Apple hasn't really done well on the services side, even including iCloud for a very long time. So, you know, I think product's great. Not infallible, but close. Services, I think that they've made a lot of missteps. So I'm not going to, anticipate that they'll never be wrong about what they do in terms of negotiating streaming deals.
I think Apple Apple sells music like there's no tomorrow. As a market stall, there's nothing second to it. You know, it is superb. But one thing that they don't have a good track record with is dealing adequately with music and dealing adequately with photos as a user experience. And I think that's where they're going to fall down a little bit, because if you look at the UK, UK is massively Spotify. Chatroom's already mentioned this. You know, LJP says UK is mainly Spotify, and that's because we don't have anything else. There is no iTunes Radio. There is no Beats Music. You know, so we have no choice. We've got Last.fm or we've got Spotify, and that's pretty much it. And people are bought into Spotify, and a lot of people who have the free account, it's their drug sale, and they end up paying the $10 a month to get the unlimited stuff and ad-free stuff. And they actually quite like it. They love, and Paul Wheatley, I know, loves his Spotify, and the fact that he can share it with, you know, his family, a couple of people in his family, that they don't raise too many flags on it. He thinks it's fine. And Apple's got to get past that, when actually they don't have a track record of streaming here in the UK other than the stuff that comes out that you've already purchased. And it's a new product for people to buy into. And yeah, okay, they make a sale to start with. But to get people to walk away from their Spotify accounts when they're in a habit with that, I think that's a tough job.
Yeah.
There's also a difference between people who are going to use and be very loyal to a free service and put up with the ads. That doesn't equate with them moving up to the paid service if the free service goes away. I think a lot of those people are just going to simply do without streaming music at that point. They use it because it's free. And if you take the free option away, they're not going to jump up and start pony up cash to use it. They'll just do without again.
Yeah, I mean, for them, it's basically kind of a music wallpaper, something that can play in the background and is basically just noise, and that's it.
Yeah, you know, geez, I got to bring up something really funny about this. There's been a lot of noise recently about Jay-Z's service Tidal, and I'm a religious Spotify user because one of the reasons why I love Spotify the most. As I do a lot of event DJing stuff as well as my club DJ stuff, and Michael Simmons and the gang over at Algorithm have, you know, let me into the beta for a DJ app, and DJ app basically allows me to be at a thing, someone come up and ask for the craziest song that I would never have in my DJ kit, but I can pull it up through Spotify, throw it right onto the turntable and play it. And I'm using an electronic turntable at this point, basically a DJ controller. So it gives me access to 20 million songs while I'm playing an event. So for that, I love Spotify.
Sorry, that doesn't break terms of service with Spotify?
Nope. Spotify integrated it. It's completely legal. They both advertise it. It's very amazing.
Do they pay the performance fees that the artist then?
I think Algorithm does.
Oh. Cool.
So what's really, really cool, though, is as much of flack as Jay-Z has caught for Tidal, I've been using Tidal for over a month now. I pay an extra $20 for the really good stuff, because if you have the ears for it, if you can tell, it sounds a freaking amazing. Like, it is so much better, the lossless audio that they're playing, like the high bitrate stuff. Like, you can, and I listen to a lot of acoustic stuff when I'm not doing anything, like if I'm working or just, you know, working in my office playing with the laser, it sounds so amazing. And so I agree, it's really going to be hard to peel Spotify away from my knuckles, but I decided to throw 3 months at Tidal to see if I would really care about how much better it sounds. And I do. And it's kind of funny because I don't think Tidal's going to make it, or I'm hoping that they do. but they're getting so much crap recently, I don't think that they're going to make it. So it's unfortunate that the best competition for Spotify and forever is probably going to go down just due to some bad marketing and Jay-Z not being able to hide the street kid enough not to get mad when people say stupid stuff to him that he goes on these rants. So, hey, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yes. I've been curious about Tidal. So since you've been using it, how's the catalog and how's the UI? I know the audio quality. I've heard several times from a few people that I trust that the audio quality is great, like you're saying, but how are the other parts of the service?
The catalog is amazing to me, but I have to spin that with the thing. Like, you know, being a DJ, I listen to all types of music and I worked on three different formats of radio station. So the catalogs that I know mostly delve into, 80s, 90s, and 2000s alternative, 80s, 90s, and 2000s hip hop, will guarantee it's there. It's Jay-Z and his homies, and Jay-Z is a big alternative guy, right? So like, I don't know if I was going to pull up Kenny Loggins or, you know, some country tunes that might be missing. The rock catalog, which I 80s rock, you know, hair band, you know, a lot of hairspray and makeup, like I dig that stuff too. And a lot of that's there. So for what I listen to, I haven't found anything missing yet that's not so bad. No iBookery, nothing's going to make your Apple earbuds sound good. Matter of fact, you should run them over with the car as soon as possible.
Yeah. I haven't even taken the seal off mine. They look so bad. Yeah. I don't know so many things about them, but.
Yeah. If you listen to that, then you definitely don't need to pay for Tidal, because if those sound great to you, you're fine.
Kenny with Highway to the Danger Zone, says LJ. Isn't the UI Spotify ripoff for Tidal, though, says Lee. And Joseph says Tidal does look very cool, though. So
Actually, I think UI for Tidal is better than Spotify. I'm hoping that Spotify will steal some stuff back if it has been stolen, but every UI is stolen.
So, yeah, no, true. Just don't take Front Row, because that's a pile of shit. That only exists in one place. Apple has released a microsite called Everything Changes with iPad. It's an iPad-focused site that explores the way that the iPad can change the way that you do things every single day. The site offers up a selection of apps with ideas for the iPad organized into several categories. Cooking, learning, small business, traveling, and redecorating. Redecorating, yeah, of course. When I read that story, I was kind of like, okay, well, that's kind of cool. But then I just realized, I think Apple have looked and gone, holy shit, no one sees their iPad as particularly relevant anymore. And I haven't used an iPad at all since I got my iPhone 6.
Oh, I use mine every day.
Even less now.
Yeah.
Well, too. Okay, but I mean,
I use mine all the time, but I agree with you. I think that's exactly why they put it up, to stem the decline in sales. But I think the decline in sales is largely because it's not the same kind of refresh rate that you see with the phone. You know, it took off, right? It was still, to this date, I think it's still Apple's most successful launch of a product in terms of sales. But you don't need to replace your iPad every year. I know people who are going 2-3 years. Some people still have their first gen iPad and they're still using that. But certainly if you have a second or third gen, there's not a whole lot that's been compelling enough to make you upgrade since then. And the battery life is still good on them. You know, the batteries seem to have held their charge. Yeah. You can upgrade them mostly to the latest operating system, and Apple hasn't introduced a whole lot of new features into them. So you're getting a little faster, a little more storage, but that's not a really compelling reason to switch. Hang on to it. Save yourself $800, which is another point. They're also not subsidized. So when you want to buy one, you're paying the full boat for it.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, the only problem here is that Apple did their job too well, meaning that, you know, they took, 10 years ago, like whenever we got the iPhone, right, they had a strategy that, hey, we are going to diversify. We're going to get out of just being a one screen company and that screen being your computer screen. And we're going to start doing these other screens. And so they did an iPhone, and then they did the iPad, and now we have the watch. So they've given us, I mean, how many screens do we need to look at? And now our attention is split between those, and they even knew right up front. I mean, Steve Jobs had the famous hold trucks, you know, speech, and Tim Cook repeatedly said, you know, the iPad's going to take over for your, for the desktop or notebooks for a lot of people. And it did. But the thing is just like your laptop, just like Chuck's saying, you're not going to replace your iPad every year. You don't do that with your laptop. You're not going to do that with your iPad. You're going to go 2-3 years because it's a great device. It works really well. They last a really long time. You don't need, you know, there's not huge significant speed improvements when they bring a new one out. There's not a ton of new features. It's still just a screen that you're doing the things that you do on it. And it's also, you know, one of these things where everything's a very personal device. So what I'm doing on mine versus what you're doing on yours is very specific. So once it's met that need, and as long as it's meeting that need, you have no reason or excuse to buy a new one. So I think there's a lot of factors going on here. Yep. And I don't think Apple's surprised by it. You know, I don't, a lot of people seem to be focusing like this is a big problem. I don't think they see this as a big problem. You know, they've created a mature product and a mature ecosystem, and now it's just falling into that realm, and now they just have to manage it. They just have to know, you know, every 2-3 years, people who have an iPad are going to upgrade them, and it's going to fall into that natural cycle. I think it is still an area of
concern for them, and I think that they still see a lot of headroom in the marketplace out there. So what this says to me, what this microsite says to me, is they're not trying to push people to upgrade as much, but they're trying to show the diverse uses of it that go beyond the tech stuff. So there's cooking, there's learning, traveling, all really family, home-oriented things rather than, you know, crunch numbers and, you know, it's do photography.
The device that sits on the stand in the kitchen that you can read a recipe off.
Right.
Yeah.
With a wipeable surface.
Right. So go after the people who haven't bought one yet, and there are still a lot of them, and there's still a big potential in that market.
Yeah, right. And you know what's funny too is I think another thing it does though, if you are a person who has, say, put the iPad a little bit out of cycle, and I kind of agree partially with Chuck and partially with Ewan. Mine is out of cycle, but not completely. It's just in a different cycle. Mostly now I use it as a second screen, whereas before I used it kind of as my primary device. I mean, I got to the point where I was Federico-ing. You know how we turn things into a verb, where I was using that my primary device, but now, you know, my computer's back to my primary device just because I kind of changed my workflow a little bit. And it's mostly a second screen via AirDisplay and stuff like that. And I also use it as a second screen for when I'm watching the telly. I'm, you know, using it to be social TV watching or looking up people on IMDb going, man, where do I know that chick from? Or where do I know this actor from? And things like that. So I think the thing I like about what they're doing here is it kind of pulls you back a reminder. To me, one of my favorite, most unheralded Apple services that not enough people use because I deal with dumbasses all day, iTunes U. Oh my God, there's such great content in iTunes
U. Content,
there's some amazing stuff in there. And most people don't even know, or they don't use it, or it's forgot about. And Apple has spent a ton of money to put this stuff out there.
I think people look at iTunes U and think it's Ping.
Yeah.
I really think they look at iTunes U and they think it's something to do to organize their favorites in music. I don't think they understand that it's an unbelievable learning experience.
Oh my, such great stuff in there. Even just some of the public talks that come up at universities that you would love to sit in, but I can't go to Cambridge, but I can listen to the same talk on Cambridge. So somewhere between iTunes U and TED, I do use my iPad an awful lot to keep the brain cells function, to make up for the damage I do with the whiskey and the now legal products in Hawaii. We just made a gang. So yeah, it's really a nice service, and I wish more people get that. So I like what they're doing is reminding you something that you didn't know your device can do, or maybe you knew and just forgot about it. And this is a cool way to put it back into foresight. And that also opens a door up that if next month they announce a new iPad, maybe you won't look at it like, well, I don't really need one. Maybe you might rethink, okay, I need to upgrade or something like that. So I think there's
if you look at a list of devices, so, you know, you go through the Apple, you go through the phone, the iPad, the MacBook Air, and all the way up through the devices. What you've actually created at the lower end is almost like where there's an overlap. So if you've got a 6 Plus phone, and you've got an iPad Air, and you've got an 11-inch MacBook Pro, as I've got all three, what's happened is those devices have kind of overlapped to the point that the middle device is almost surplus to requirements. Because if I go anywhere and I want a bigger screen, I take my iPad Air because I take my MacBook Air because my iPad Air doesn't really do enough for that for it to warrant it. And if I don't need that screen size to look at, my phone is perfectly good enough. It's better than, you know, it's as good as a 7-inch tablet, no question. So I've almost got an overlap of the devices where the middle one has become obsolete with the process. And I think people are still having it. People do see it as relevant. People do still use it. But there's a lot of people are going, where are the sales gone?
It's the middle child.
There are two things. I don't think Apple or Tim is really concerned about it, because if they were, they would do one of two things. They would either really double down on ad and on the messaging about the iPad and would try to push it hard, or they would just let it slide and do nothing with it. And we haven't seen neither. So, I mean, Apple knows how many new customers compared to...
Oh, I think this is a thin end of a wedge.
They have.
I think this is like hang on, let's just give it a little nudge and see if we can just pull back a little bit.
Yep.
Because, you know, there's an indication there that we're starting to think about maybe, you know, we should be doing more towards this rather than letting people come to us with it. We should be exactly. more proactive.
And then, people are always comparing it to the iPhone in sales numbers and everything. And I think that's wrong, because a phone is still in people's minds more valuable than a tablet or even a desktop or Mac.
I think update cycles are a key part as well, because if you look at the update cycle of the iPad, as you've said there, Chuck, you know, you don't need it to update an Atom, you don't need to update it as much. And I think that's another issue that they'll get with the watch as well. And that's where I've tried to rationalize a $17,000 watch. The watch doesn't do any processing per se. So, as a result, it doesn't need to upgrade at the same kind of speed. Now, I had a conversation with Paul Wheatley yesterday, and he was just like, "That said, we're that same thing." He went, "No, ICANN would go absolutely mad if there wasn't an upgrade cycle for watch." And he's right. But there's a bit of me thinking, if you bought the first Apple Watch, you're sitting thinking there's going to be Apple Watch 2 next year, therefore my one is going to be obsolete. And I don't think it is. I really hope it's
probably not.
I would think that the watch will last for a very long time, because otherwise I think they're going to get into an awful lot of criticism for $500 watches and $1,000 watches that only last a year. I think there would be too much flack over that. I think the upgrade cycle will be lower on watch.
I mean, they didn't get much flack for the iPhone, for the first one. And I mean, that one was basically obsolete after a year. So I don't think that is really an issue, although... I think you're right that it won't be the same, because it's doing so much less and there aren't the big hardware requirements that you have for an iPhone.
Interesting. Time will tell, but and there's a lot of people going, "Oh, I'm waiting for version 2 of the Apple Watch." Well, yeah, okay, I think it'll be along soon enough for you to have, but don't expect, if you've just bought an Apple Watch, don't think it's going to be obsolete for several years, I would hope.
You may get your Apple Watch 2 before some people get their Apple Watch 1.
This is of course the cutoff date for delivery of the 8.5 window, isn't it? I mean, it would be interesting. I don't know anyone who... I did push out and say, if you haven't had a watch, can you tell us? Because it's due today and it's not out there. But no one's replied to that, so I don't know if all of those original 24 to 8 are actually fulfilled or not.
My second order just shipped today, and that one was for the 8.5 order window.
So it's shipped today, so you won't get it till tomorrow, so you won't get, it's an interesting one.
Yeah.
I call them the 801ers, so the group of people who ordered straight away are the 801ers. And I tweeted out 8/5 gate. It wasn't a hashtag that caught on, though, unfortunately. So
my prediction is that these watches are going to start coming in a lot faster than they were first expected. I think I think the demand is slowing down, and I think the production is ramping up. I did go. I haven't gotten my Apple Watch, and still haven't decided if I'm going to. But I did go try one on, and I made an appointment at the Apple Store. But when I went in there, there was nobody else trying on a watch. You know, I just walked up. I didn't need an appointment. They certainly didn't rush me through anything. But you know, there were maybe one or two people looking at the watches that they had set up on the sides of the store that you can't wear but can just look at. But that was really it. And the store itself was very busy. And this is a pretty popular Apple store. It's in the mall at Short Hills, which is a pretty upscale mall in New Jersey.
It's been my experience, too, when I go into the Apple stores. There doesn't seem to be a lot of people milling around the watches, even though the store is relatively busy. And the try-on people are just sitting there waiting for people to come in.
Right.
The try-ons sound like a race from Star Trek. Ron Johnson started the Enjoy Company. Anyone bothered? No,
what?
Me either. Ron Johnson. He started a company called Enjoy. He was on the TV the other day about launching it. So there you go. And he spoke about Angela Arendt. And I have got some people who I know who work within Apple. And one of the things that I was saying to them when I spoke to them this week was, you know, how do you feel about Arendt? And they said, she's brilliant. Because Ron Johnson just left you on your own. He was all right, but he didn't really care. You know, you never got that much contact from him. Whereas Arendt sends out personal messages that give her way, her personal beliefs. And they were actually really angry because they said the video that got leaked the other week, they reported on, anyone could have had access to it, because everyone in Apple's got access to those videos, and that includes anyone who's a contractor for Apple, and anyone could have leaked it. But they were actually quite angry that someone leaked that, because they were saying, well, she's really, really positive for us. She gives an awful lot of consideration to us. She clearly cares about how we feel and how she feels about the product. She said in one of the videos that she was shattered that things hadn't gone as smoothly as possible with the watch. And they said, if you let that video out, she'll stop making them, and then we'll suffer as a result of that. So inside Apple, there was a lot of anger that video was actually leaked, because they don't want it to stop. They like what she's doing. So thumbs up, Angela. Well done. I can't say who it was, and I can't say where it was, even though that's a positive story. But Arendt is getting the thumbs up from the people inside Apple, from what I hear.
Well, that's fair. You know, I mean, a lot of people forget Apple is not an entertainment company. Steve Jobs was not, a movie star, and neither is Tim Cook. It's still a business, and they're still trying to run their business and do things internally that we don't all only know about.
No.
Exactly. No, you know what's really true is when I worked at Apple, I come from the John Ronson regime, and whenever we would have our bi-weekly, you know, Ronnie called to the store, all the kids gathered around, and he always kind of came off as that sleazy uncle that, you know, acted nice in front of grandma, but when she wasn't looking.
Easy, mate. Watch out. It's for the libel. That's all. Let's carry on.
No. I mean, and this is what it felt like. I'm not saying it was his position. It was just how it came off. And there's a certain thing where someone is being nice to you, but it seems disingenuous. And there's a thing when someone's being nice to you and it feels like they're being nice to you. And so, you know, not to say that he did anything wrong, that's the way it came off. But it also, I also know people that are still there that were there when I was there, and they say a lot of things back of house feel so much better now than they did before. Part of that is learning, because the business has grown a lot, you know, since the time I was there. But I'm sure part of it has to do with the people that were working there, you know, and the people that were in charge up the stream. You know, we had, at the time I was there, we had one motive and one motive only. Don't hassle people about sales. Don't bother them. Let them, you know, if they want to buy it. If they don't, you know, be nice about it. But if they do buy something, you better make sure they buy AppleCare. Literally, that was what we got out of Ron. And it's not saying that that's a bad thing. That's good for the company. It was great for the company. It's actually good for people who ruin their devices and need help, who maybe wouldn't have had AppleCare. And I have been able to save so many people because they did have AppleCare. But I can tell you that, like you're saying, anecdotally, I've heard from other people that the new back of house feels so much better than it did from the time when I was. Okay.
Excellent. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. They are awesome. We love them to bits. You should buy everything that you want for the web from UK2 or from 100tb.com, because they do dedicated servers in the US starting at $139. And they also are the people who give us our live feed, which is 2 seconds to Hawaii and 40 seconds to the other end of my office, where Muller's still sitting listening to the show on massive delay. There he is. So there we go. He's not looked up yet. You see, there is a long delay. Oh, no, there we go. It's only down to 5 seconds now. Check out UK2. They're absolutely fantastic. Go to britishchatnetwork.com/UK2 and you go straight to their pages. But if you go to btn.com/, and then you put in sponsors, What you'll get is the offer codes that they give us, and they're absolutely fantastic. And at the moment, if you want a .London address, then it's 50% off with UK2. Wow. I can't even match that with our voucher code. So go and check them out, because they're absolutely brilliant. And thank you also to Wirecast, who gave us $2,000 worth of streaming software, which we couldn't do the show without them as well. And check out their fantastic piece of software called ScreenFlow, because it's absolutely superb. And it's only $50 or something like that for the upgrade. So check them out. Thank you very much to everyone that does it. Please tweet out and say thank you to UK2 and thanks to Telestream for supporting BTM, because without them, we would be lost. Right. It's time for the cool thing. Patrice, would you like to start us off? Do you have something cool? Can you put the links in your chat room early and then I might get a picture?
Yeah, I will do that. My cool thing is actually a two-parter, or, well, actually a three-parter. It's the OmniFocus app for iOS. It's now universal, so OmniFocus 2 is now universal. I think you can get an upgrade price if you've got version 1 or the previous iPhone version. But now it's universal, and the really awesome part, and the third part, is the Apple Watch app. Because I think, I mean, from what I've seen so far, it's one of the best watch apps so far. Without, I'm guessing they didn't have access to the watch, but I've used it a couple of times to manage my tasks or to just write something down, and it was really awesome. And it's the apps are available, so the universal app is available for $39 US dollars or £29, £29.99. And there is a pro upgrade if you need more features, you can get for free if you've gotten.
Here's the thing, Patrice, and I'm not wishing to dis your pick at all here.
Yeah.
I've always looked at OmniFocus, seeing $39 as the price, and thought, I want something that really does help me and change my life for that price. And I've never seen a feature in it that I think really will make a massive difference to my working life. So there's, you know, give me the hard sell. Tell me why I should be buying OmniFocus, because it always leaves me feeling just a little bit cold. And I don't know why.
Different people need different tools. For me, it's really the best tool to organize my tasks. I've got a lot of things going on in my work and just my private life, and I just need something where I can do a quick glance, where I know what I have to do today, where I can schedule tasks in the future and stuff like that. So for me, it's the support, it's the design, it's the syncing solution. It's just the whole package. That's what makes Omni's apps, I mean, all of them, makes them really great. But, I mean, if it's not for you, if it leaves you cold, that's totally fine. There are other options. Things, for example, Todoist, that will do basically the same job.
I think I am a bit different. I was talking to Steve Neighbor early on today, and he was saying about the watch and how it's helped him with like, he's got a meeting in a meeting room, and it pops up and he knows where it is, and it really has brought his calendar to life. And I said, yeah, but that's where it falls down for me, because my calendar is, right, where am I today? And I'm in Banbury at an airfield shooting something all day. So I don't go anywhere. I don't have to hop from meeting room to meeting room, from action to action, from job to site to site. I turn up at a place and I'm there for the day, and then I go home. So, you know, that's where it falls down for me.
And it can even be things, though, like if you really get into that stuff, I've messed around with OmniFocus, and I go on and off of it. And I think the main problem is you have to be one of these people who's disciplined about getting into the system and the philosophy of it. And, you know, a place to start is with, you know, the David Allen GTD book. And you don't have to be totally into that stuff to use OmniFocus. I don't want, you know, because you can find your own way with it. But if you're into that sort of mindset, it is one of the best tools for managing all that stuff. You have to be, you know, because it helps you with things like, you know, doing your reviews of your tasks and setting up the context of those tasks and all these sorts of things. So you've got to sort of understand the underlying philosophy a little bit, or be into to get the most out of it.
No, I it's a question that's raised to me, and there must be other people out there that think, well, yeah, it sounds great, and everyone raves about it, but I just don't see how it works. So I'll $39, do I want to give it a try?
No. Don't start. But what I'm saying is, if you really want to understand it, don't start there. Start with learning about GTD and the underlying concepts and things behind that first, yeah, and then decide if that's the tool that you want to manage that stuff. Because like Patrice was saying, there's lots of tools.
Yeah, no.
I think for those people who are really into this stuff, this is one of the best ones, though.
Yeah. I went to buy an app and I've got some homework. Jesus.
I mean, and if you have just five things to do a week, then probably you really don't need any workflow, any tool whatsoever.
Mate, five things to do in a week is a massive week's work for me. Superb. Thank you very much. I'll take that. Are you coming to the bash? I hope so. Because
who?
The bash. Who's coming to the bash? Any of you boys coming to the bash?
Can't make it this year. Sorry.
But you come in next year. You did say next year. You've said next year. Since
2017.
Yeah.
When our UK trip is. I don't know when. Probably won't be in July though. So.
I'll move the bash. But
we got to do a special event, yeah, right? When I come.
Well, when it's my 50th birthday, that's going to be in August. So we'll move it then. Anyway, this year we have got it on. It is Adam won't be there, but it's the 3rd and 4th of July. 3rd for the curry. £10 for the curry gets you a seat at the table, and you get your £10 off your bill at the end. So you know, it's not like the bash at all. Bash is on the 4th down at the local village hall. It's absolutely superb. It's a fantastic venue. Lovely big open outdoor space, and we've got a big hall inside as well, which is really good. All the fun of all the people there that come for the podcast. Some of the people from the London Mac User Group are coming up, and Greeny will be there, and I'll be there, and Muller will be there, and loads of other people will be there. Under 16s getting free of charge, no paying for the kids. But when you get there, you say, oh, it's £20. You know, who do you think you are, Glastonbury? No. But that £20 gets you all the beer, all the wine, all the spirits, all the soft drinks, all the food, all the entertainment, everything that you'll need for the entire day. All you need to do is just bring yourself. Nothing else. We've dropped the price because we have no sponsors, so we need to sell tickets. And one thing I would say to you is on June the 4th, I have to confirm the venue that we've got enough people going so that we can pay for the venue. And it's £400 for the venue. It's a lot of money for the day. If you are thinking about coming, I really could do with you buying your ticket before the 4th of June. You would help us out immensely if you're coming. Please, please, please get your tickets booked in now, because then when I say yes, we're definitely having it, I'm committed to it, and I have to pay it, otherwise we lose the deposit on it. So I'm not trying to get your money so I can sit on it and make a fortune selling stocks and shares. I just need to confirm the venue. Please get in. We had a lot of people came in late last year. Fortunately, we said, yeah, we're going to go ahead regardless, and we were fine. We broke even on it, but you know, we're not making a massive profit in this, and now we've dropped the price by £5 as well. We need a few more people to come in. We need four more people for every one to come in, so please, please, please book yourself in. We do appreciate it if you can possibly come. 3rd and 4th of July, don't be late. And what we're doing as well, because we'll have the new studio by then, just like we've got a live in inverted commas, I suppose, studio audience here today, in the form of Muller, we're going to do a live studio once on the Friday. So just before the whole curry thing kicks off, we'll be at the new studios, and if you want to come down and sit in on the live show on the Friday afternoon, there'll be some beer floating around, and there'll be loads of fun taking place, and loads of booing and harring around, I suppose, so it'll be a good fun time. But we will be doing a Mac show on the Friday, which we don't normally do, because we're not going to be too worried about doing podcasts on the day. So, there we go. Excellent. Adam, do you have a cool thing for us?
Yeah, I do, actually, and I got this one actually off the Change with iPad ad, because I saw this thing on there, and I am not huge into, or wasn't in school huge into, like science and things like that, but my wife is a chemist, and I saw this chemist app from Thix, Thix, and it's basically a virtual chemistry lab. So you've got your beakers and your stoppers and your Bunsen burners and your petri dishes, and then all kinds of different chemicals and mixtures, and you've got liquids and gases and stuff like that. And I'm pretty sure the thing is scientifically accurate. Amazing to play around with. Mostly I just try and figure out what I can mix together to blow beakers up.
Can you blow thing up?
Okay. Oh, absolutely. That'll be the first. Yes.
That'll be the thing for just my
son. Some sodium in water and boom, there you go. So that's my tip. And it's really kind of fun to play around with. The only thing is it probably helps to have some sort of chemistry background, because I don't know where this developer is, but there is like zero instruction. Like, there's no how to. You can click on the different chemicals and get a lot of information, you know, in terms of atomic weights and temperatures and things like that. But there's like no guide really to walk you through how to actually use the app. So the UI is more just sort of like fumble around and figure out what to do. So I'm going to need to spend some more time with it, but it, you know, visually it's really, really great. There seems to be a few little visual bugs here and there, but overall just super fun to play around with. And they do have another, for those people who are more mechanically inclined, they do have another app called Machinist that is like electrical machines and switches and buttons and stuff like that. And this one's really cool because you can even tap into some of the sensors and things like that that are on your iPad. So you can get into the motion sensor. Oh, and I should mention it's iPad only. But you can get into the motion sensor and the camera. And, you know, like they have one little demo app in Machinist that's a, you know, hey, somebody's stealing my iPad. So if you turn it on and you pick up the iPad, it'll sound an alarm. But you can build that thing. So you make all the electrical circuits and connections. So it's got batteries and switches.
So you might actually learn something.
Speakers. Yeah, it's really fun. So I think they're $4.99 US individually, but they also have them in a bundle, which I picked up for $7.99.
Yeah, the chat room's already suggested a show title for today, which is Blowing Shit Up, which I think is going to be apt. Because, I mean, my son won't say this, but if I said to him, I've got a chemist app, the first question would be, can you blow anything up in it?
Yeah. So my challenge to myself is to figure out a way to do it, you know, because you have those sort of violent reactions that happen really quickly and just immediately blow the thing up. I want to find some ways to sort of do it more gradually so I can see it sort of build up and then explode. So I got to figure out how to do that. But as the chemical reactions are happening too, it sort of gives you this running list. And another cool thing that I found is there's like a lab notebook that gets generated automatically. So it will keep track of everything that you do, every step that you make, and make a step-by-step list of all of that stuff.
Can you make 99% pure blue P2P meth?
Yes, I bet you could. I thought about that. That's funny you mentioned that. I thought about you could probably set up the whole distillation. You've got the filters. Yeah, you probably could, because like I said, I think this is very scientifically accurate in terms of what you can do with it. I just don't have the knowledge to use it that way.
So you can make it and then sell it to your Sims on your other apps, right?
Exactly.
Bryn Wider said, blowing shit up should be the discussion topic for the pinch. So I just got a thing in my head that one week we just post shows and every show has got the same show title, blowing shit up. Every single show, even the popular show.
There you go. Chemist from Fix.
Yeah, there we go. I like that. I'm going to be buying that today. Definitely. No question. I'm out of pocket.
Thanks, Adam. First the Disney app and now the chemistry app.
I know. I got out light.
Just know you'll be completely frustrated by the UI because it's weird. It's like nothing makes sense.
Last week I got out light. I only spent $20. On the big show, cool things. I was very restrained. Now, do you want one of these cool caricatures? Here's one of Dan Rodriguez. Thank you very much, Dan, for buying your caricature off Len Peralta. That is Dan. I saw the pictures he sent through. That is no question that is Dan. And he paid $100, and for that, he got his caricature, which is a Len Peralta original, which he gets to keep and do whatever he wants with. He gets the sticker bomb artwork that you can see there so he can get a device cover made for like his iPhone or for the back of his MacBook Pro. And he also manages to get the Access All Areas Pass, which he can display anywhere whenever he wants. And he gets to pick a banner so he can support his company. He can have a company thing, or he could have a local school fete or something like that, or he could have a picture of his children that he wanted up there. We'd rather it was the caricatures, though. Or he can pick his podcast dream team, as Batwinch did with hers, which is up there as well. And thanks to Arthur and Andrew, who also had theirs done, Andy. They are superb. They are absolutely them. And we're getting the next batch done. So Chuck and Patrice are going to be in the next batch of people that we get done for the network.
Nice.
$100 gets you an original Len Peralta caricature. It gets you your sticker bomb artwork. It gets you a Twitter image that you can display, and it gets you access all areas pass, and it gets you a banner in the rotation on the homepage. So if you'd like to do it, send me an email to btncaricatures@gmail.com, and I'll tell you how to go about getting it done. But you are paying Len direct for it. You are not paying us for it. It is a Len Peralta original. He's given us a very special offer code so that you can get it done, and we give you all the extra stuff there within that. So please check it out, and please do support Len, because he's been absolutely fantastic and in doing the caricatures. And I say we've got another 11, I think, actually coming up in the next batch. So cheers. Doc, what do you have for us, mate?
All right, let me throw you a link real quick, because I want you to check this out. Mine is kind of a two-parter, but they are connected, I promise. Okay, so the first one is a cool thing found, but in a way, it's not a physical thing quite yet, but it could turn into one. So OWC, which is Otherworld Computing, MaxSales.com is their most famously known, happens to be one of the coolest cats in the business when it comes to buying things that are related to your Mac, especially things that are going to have to do with making your Mac somewhat faster. These guys are running a contest for video creators, and this is something you could do with Ellison yourself to try to throw together something. But if you happen to win this prize, they got crazy grand prize package, a Mac Pro, 4K monitor, a year of Creative Cloud, Avid Transport console, Color Surface, wireless keyboard, Thunderbolt dock. You get a 2 terabyte SSD, an Envoy enclosure for your SSD, another 4-bay Thunderbolt Ray, 64 gig OWC memory for the Mac Pro, and a GoPro Hero Black. That is the grand prize package, and all you need to do is create a 30 to 60 seconds commercial talking about, you know, what's possible or go further or why you need the speed in order to create the capacity to dream. Really, really cool. They basically have you, they're crowdsourcing an Apple-esque commercial for OWC, and I'm definitely going to jump myself into this fray to try to win this. And to round out this craziness from OWC, I put the link in so you guys can join it. Here's a grip that I have decided to pre-order. The old one got a lot of credit. As a matter of fact, they used this in the Bentley ad in order to shoot that really epic Bentley ad that was, you know, shot completely on an iPhone and edited on iPad in the back of the Bentley. And this is known as the Beast Grip. I heard somebody screenshot the Beast Grip. The new pro version runs for $80 for just the grip itself. If you need lenses, you can go up to like $250 USD, but it'll give you a depth of field adapter, a wide angle lens, and a fisheye lens. And this will allow you to stick in basically any smartphone, including something as large as a 6 Plus, and allow you to have some professional sort of lensery and holes to connect things to. So like a Rode video mic or an extra video light or just quarter 20 thread that allows you to, you know, stick it to your tripod or whatever. So
most of those are standard 37 millimeter threads, aren't they? And you can buy a hell of a lot of stuff with a 37 mil thread on Amazon, on Prime.
I'm really glad you told me that, because I've been trying to figure it out. We call it a quarter 20 thread, but I have been looking at some stuff from overseas, and now I can know that it's 37 mil.
I have a Polaroid pack, which you can get on Amazon. You can get Prime on it as well, so it's free, up there. And it's basically a little set of there's a circular polarizer in there. There's a couple of graduated filters that are circular as well. And they're 37 mil. You just screw them on, and they fit onto the iographer, because that thread in the iographer is a 37 mil thread. And a lot of these things are just standard 37 mil threads. There's tons of stuff you can get in 37 mil. Just go to Amazon and type in 37 mil. And photography, and you'll get shed loads of stuff come back.
Yeah, I was going to go back and forth between the Beast Grip and the new iographer they got coming out called the iographer Go, which just showed up at NAB, but I couldn't find anything on their website other than what they showed at NAB. So I've been interested in the iographer Go as well, but Beast Grip I think is going to be a little bit quicker, but I don't know. Hopefully I can find something from the iographer guys maybe for next week, because that grip, I remember you using that at Macworld, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, Dave is the guy, and he was awesome. He gave us an iographer for, I've got one for the Air, and I've got one for the Mac, the 7-inch one as well. Good picks, mate. Thank you very much. Chuck, what do you have for us?
I had, well, since I've cost you a lot of money over the past several weeks, I thought I'd take pity this week and feature a pick at the low, low price of zero, but only for a limited time. If you're familiar with the folks at MacFun, they make a lot of really neat utilities, things mostly around photography. So apps called Tonality and SnapHeal, which is sort of takes the cloning tool element from Photoshop and makes it its own utility. Really neat stuff, very well done. They have an app called Snap Select, which works in conjunction with your Photos app or iPhotos app, if you're still using that. And what it does is it helps you discover duplicate photos, photos that are very similar, different kinds of photos that are just kind of cluttering up your hard drive. You know, with digital photography, there's no cost for film anymore. So people just take thousands and thousands of shots, and that tends to fill up your hard drive space. This will help you find the ones that you don't want to keep so that you can focus on the ones that you do. It also has some filtering functions that let you kind of pre-manipulate things before you send it over to iPhoto or Photos. And it's normally $18, but right now in observance of Mother's Day, at least in the U.S., I don't know if you have Mother's Day this weekend in the U.K., it's for free. So it's a limited time. I'm not exactly sure when it will go back to its normal price, but as of this recording, you at least have a few days to get it, I would say. It's available in the Mac App Store, and I will drop the link in the show notes, which I should have done already. And it's I haven't tried it extensively yet. I ran it on some small libraries that I have on my MacBook Air. But it seems to work very well, and I'm looking forward to seeing how well it can help clean up the 10, 12 years of old photos I have cluttering up my iMac.
Hey, Chuck, just for clarification, have you gotten it to work with the Photos app?
No, I haven't done, no. Does it not work with Photos yet?
I can't get it to work with the Photos app, but it does work great with iPhoto, so.
Okay. And what I've been using it for primarily is to help clear up libraries. So you don't need either app to do that because it works directly with the albums and the folders themselves. So if it doesn't work with Photos yet, I would hope that they're going to come up with an update for it soon. But even then, it's still very usable in clearing out your libraries from what I've seen so far. And
it's a great app. I just wanted to ask because you mentioned Photos, and I couldn't get it to work, so I thought maybe I was missing something.
Yep. No, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, they've got an app that they're pushing at the moment called Noiseless, and things great. That remove. Well, have you had a go with it then?
Yeah.
Because what put me off was the picture that they put up. It was clearly obvious that it was one of those classic fakes where they got a really good picture and they deliberately noised it on the opposite side, and I was like,
Yeah, I used it on an app or on a photo that I had taken that was like a low light photo from my iPhone, and it was brilliant. I mean, it was like amazing how well it did just on a sort of one button click. And that's what these guys are pretty good at. You know, a lot of their apps are, and you might have higher standards though than I do. Honest,
because it's not cheap.
You know,
it's 10 quid.
I'm the end user. I'm the iPhoto guy. I'm the like I want to click one button and have it magically look better. So
if I can get an offer code, you know, just even a 30-day offer code off it, I'd buy it if it was any good, because it really would be good. But it's like $10, and $10 is a lot of money, but $10 is a lot of money on something that doesn't work. You know, it's just like, hang on.
Well, Noiseless, you can get a demo. You can try it out before you lay out the $10. So if you go to the website directly.
I shall do that. There we go.
They got demos and everything. You know, I should have added this as a pick, but Ewan's post that he just posted, and he's not allowed to do this because that would just be kind of like, you know, selling his own
nepotism.
Whistle. But Ewan's post on his site about, you know, finishing your photos. Oh my God, you're going to have diarrhea if you want to read it in the bathroom. It's a little long.
I gave some shit out the other week about 3,000 words blog, and I've done 2,600 words on just levels.
Yeah, it's a big thing though.
Wow.
And I agree with you. Like, I spend the majority of my time in levels as well. And I've tried, you know, I'm a Lightroom guy at this point, but I do find that if I'm in a real hurry, I won't even open Lightroom. I'll just take the raw file, bring it straight into Photoshop, move some levels around, and I'm done. And Lightroom seems like I'll get in there and I'll start pressing buttons. And four cups of whiskey later, I'm still in there pressing buttons, goofing around, because you could be in there for days. So if you're kind of like Adam, if you learn nothing else in your iPhoto or the new Photos app, just learning how to manipulate levels will change your life.
Yeah, well,
so absolutely. Instagram for the win. Even when you're shooting, I have the histogram up on my A6000 or my 7. I leave the histogram up when I'm shooting so I can shoot better. But, you know, the iPhone and things that people are using nowadays don't necessarily give you that option. So if you learn nothing, learn levels. And if you want to learn it, read the post. I'll put the link in the chat. Go head over to Ewan's, you know, and run right through it, because it's really, really good. And like I said, it will take you a longer crap, and the wife will be on you like, what the hell are you doing in there? And you're like, I'm learning about my levels, honey. And she'll be like, what? Put the lotion back.
Yeah, right. I mean, one of the things that I said in that article is buy the Photoshop stuff from Adobe, because everyone's and that's my cool thing is Adobe Photoshop. Since they've reduced the price on Creative Cloud, it is definitely worth it. And people always say to me, "Oh, well, you know, but I don't want to afford a professional package that I only pay monthly for." It's £8.78 at the moment a month. So that doesn't buy you a packet of fags in the UK. That's cigarettes, by the way, chaps. And it doesn't buy you 2 pints of beer in London. So, in a lot of places, in the middle of Birmingham, it doesn't buy you 2 pints of beer. So for £8.78, you get a £500 application, which updates itself every day if it needs it. So you are always at the cutting edge of it. And all the things that I mentioned in there in levels, you can do all of those in free apps, as well as you can do it in Photoshop and that kind of stuff. But for the sake of £8 a month, I'm sorry, but Photoshop's a no-brainer. Absolute no-brainer. Love it to bits. So there's my cool thing. I did have a cool thing for the watch, for the iPhone, by the way, but I've left my iPhone outside and I can't remember what I picked. It'll come to me after I'm finished. There you go. Where can we get a hold of you, chaps? Patrice. Oh, bloody hell, you're in
always you
anonymous what? Vision. You're in anonymous vision.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Skype. I don't know. You can find me on Twitter at @casual_kitchen. I write on my personal blog at randomer.net. And then there's also a podcast with Ben and Jerome called Deconstruct, where we deconstruct the crappy news stories out there. And last but not least, with Dark Rock together, Ben, Kelly, and Jerome, there's the Professional Apple Users Academy at MacUser.pro.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Jolly good. Adam's just put his picture in the chat room for
Noiseless, yeah.
Noiseless. And I'm blown away. I am absolutely blown away. That is absolutely superb.
And that's the default light setting, and I mean, you can tweak it on from there. So that was a little light photo I took of the Christmas tree, right. And it had a lot of noise in it, and I brought it up and it just whoop is gone.
I'll be 10 quid lighter in a minute then. Jesus, I hate doing shows. Bloody hate doing shows.
And Chuck said I'm going in late this week.
Yeah, right. I tried.
Adam, where are you, sir?
You can find me over at Maccast, maccast.com. I also do the iOS show at theiosshow.com with Jeff Gamet and Michael Johnston. So you can check all that stuff out. And on the social medias, it's pretty much Maccast everywhere. So
Maccast everywhere. Jolly good. Doc, where are you, sir?
You can find me standing up in a minute because the watch keeps bugging the hell out of me. all over the interwebs, or the internets, as I like to call them, under at Doc Rock or Doc Rock in some form of the username, you know, hashtag, whatever you want to call it. And also all over the place here on the BTN network and on MacUser.pro, which if I don't hurry up and put out an article soon, Patrice is going to choke me.
And lastly, Chuck, where are you, sir?
I am on Twitter at Chuck Latornis. I'm running for Macworld a lot these days, macworld.com. Still once in a while at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. My own tech blog is Random Maccess, 2 M's, 2 C's, 2 S's, which I'm pretty sure is 20 years old now, which is kind of scary. And finally, the intersection of high technology and high adventure at trailcamper.com.
Excellent, mate. And I know you haven't been feeling pucker today, mate, so thank you very much for doing the show.
Somebody, I think it was Muller Biker in the chat room, suggested a hair of the dog. I said, that wasn't what got me here, but maybe it'll get me out of it. So yeah, maybe that's what I'll do after the show.
Cheers. Thanks, mate, very much. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back with The Pocket Show on Monday. Tune in live and listen to Paul Wheatley on Monday night at 8 p.m. if you want to. Failing that, stick around and watch The Pinch, which is coming up next. Thanks for listening.